the introduction. Tonight it's my great pleasure to introduce, for the second time, although I was not here, I was out of town last time, so I missed your talk a couple of years ago, but it's my pleasure to welcome you back to Many Rivers. Pratici Mathur is the founder of Vedika Global. She is a teacher of Ayurveda to people I know intimately and less intimately, but I've seen and met many of her students, and it's a delight to have her back with us. Thank you so much for coming.
Thank you. Namaste. Could you just show me your heart and let me know if you know a little bit about Ayurveda, if any of you?
This is the last one, and you said to go to bed with the sun, to get up with the sun.
Did you like that?
Yeah. I can't do
I have about an hour, Amma. You know, I'm here to give an introduction on Ayurveda, which is the science of masterful living of body, mind, and soul from ancient India. And I like to use the word ancient because I want you to know that it is very old. Well, we're talking about it today here. And so it has modern relevance, presence, application. I founded a college, low-cost clinics that are going to be established all over the world. Community platform where people can come in and take wisdom, education, support, love, touch for free. Free. In this century. So something so ancient and so relevant. Many of you have come here because maybe Amma told you, Dinara told you to come because I'm her teacher. Or maybe you liked something about the way the flyer was made. Or maybe because the energy here in the bookshop is so beautiful that every Friday you are here. I don't blame you. I like the energy here. But for whatever reason, among the billions and trillions of people who could be in dialogue, you're stuck with me. And I'm embracing you. So really what I'm bringing to you is myself. Here. Please receive me. And yes, we need a topic to converse and play with and connect with. And so the topic is awakening health with Ayurveda. I always become really quiet in the opening of any talk because I get so filled with the beauty of this moment where I can pluck anything beautiful and share with you from my Eden, my garden in which I'm dwelling. The opportunity to do that and to speak to you from my truth, from my soul, to be able to look into your awesome eyes and tell you that what I'm about to tell you is true, and that at the end of this talk you don't have to buy anything, you don't have to sign a contract, you don't have to feel like you've sold a piece of your soul just because you listen to somebody who has words. I know you will get me because I want to give you a message of hope. I want to tell you that truly I am someone who was a victim of life. I had done a PhD. I'm feeling sorry for myself. My body was crumbling. I have the stamp of a genetic condition according to which I should be in a wheelchair, and I was for a bulk of my life in the prime of my youth. My mind was disastrously self-obsessed with self-pity. And of course, in the negativity of the moment and my life, I had this deja vu moments of, see, life is shitty. See, people are nasty. See, this is so miserable. Of course I deserve to be a person with a chip on my shoulder. Of course I need to be nasty. And of course, what more can I expect except more ugliness? So my mind was grooved in its conditioning. And as far as my soul, if I had any left, because mostly I was this vacuum, this absent person that was trying to fit in anything that it could just to get through the day. I was 100 different personalities. My soul was fragmented. I didn't know my life purpose. I didn't know there was something called a life purpose. I was just living. And then I awakened. When did I awaken? Just now, this moment. I don't have any sense of past anymore. Ah, I just awoke again. Ah, awake again. It's like that for me now. So I am taking this opportunity, my beloveds, to tell you that there is hope. And I am really here as a messenger of this hope. For me, when I started seeing that hell and heaven live on this earth, and we are dying and being born every moment, and every moment either the angels are coming to get us or the demons, then I realized that it's in the moment that we're making a choice. And how do I explain to we, how should we make that right choice? How do we make the turn from seeing the life half empty or the glass half full? And for me, a knowledge that came to my help was this ancient yet modern knowledge of Ayurveda. This knowledge, Ayurveda, literally means the knowledge of life. It is not knowledge of disease. It is not knowledge of how to have the right muscle versus carb fat ratio, how to have the right cholesterol, or how to have the right, bone density test and the results on it. And it's not the science of not becoming bipolar when everything in the world insists that we should be bipolar. It just kind of is the science of life, which tells you that we are one with everything in the universe. It reminds us that we are not made of plastic or silicon or some other strange piece of junk, you know, that we are made of natural things, and that a return to this nature, not in a new agey manner, but in everything we do, from the toothpaste that we put in our mouth, to the food we eat, to what we apply on our skin when we are bathing, and how forgiveness is natural to us and not holding on to anger, how loving is more natural to us than being aggressive and violent. Even though aggression and violence moves through us, the natural state of all of nature is to come back to some resolution. After thunderstorms, everything cleans up. After hot sun that dries and parches, there is rain. After cold, frigid winter, where the leaves fall off, there is once again the warmth of spring. Somehow nature is showing us constant resolution, constant movement. In the same way, our body and our mind are showing us that though there is a cyclical nature of things, yet we keep coming to places which are better and better in our lives. If we just allow it and don't hold on to that one fall where all our leaves fell and keep mourning forever in body and mind, saying, oh, 30 years ago I was a victim. 20 years ago my mother-in-law said so and so. 10 years ago that jerk left me. 5 years ago I had cancer and I can't get over it. Are you saying what I mean? Am I esoteric for you? Good. Because I don't have a 12-step program for you. I don't have 4 easy steps, like a key, that you're going to memorize and make it. I want to get you nice and good and confused. But I just want you to walk away, not with information, but with enlightenment. I want you to remember me, just for me. I've not come here to sell you a system. I'm not sure what I have to speak, Amba, my student. I don't know if I'm living up to her expectation. I remember my teacher or my dad or my mom coming to my school, and I would just die of shame because they were not dressed in adequate clothes. So I hope I'm dressed for her and I'm smart enough for her. I love you. I don't know. But I just know that this system of knowledge, this awakening to health, is a potent system of medicine from India. It was available thousands of years ago. It is still being practiced in hospitals in India. And the world over, colleges are opening. Clinics are opening. In America alone, we have something like 15 colleges of Ayurveda. In Russia, in Europe, Ayurveda is being recognized by the governments. Many of its herbs and systems of health and healing are being now taken care of by more and more insurance companies. Perhaps it's in America that we are running behind in the mainstream acceptance of things, but yet there is popular appeal. Yet there is some kind of a movement that is grassroots. So what is this? And why have I woken up from my wheelchair? Why have I not only quit on the wheelchair in my body, but in my mind too? Why am I able to sit with you and kind of, make love to you? How? Why? Why should I? How dare I? I dare because I am a perfect being. And I learned with Ayurveda how to unpeel my body's imbalances and my mind's imbalances. And it is very systematic science. What it teaches us is from morning till night, staying in rhythm with nature. So we watch nothing else. We watch no man-made system of how we have to be in health. We only watch and observe God-made system of how to be healthy, which is nature. So seasons are important to us. The rhythm of the day, morning, sunrise, sunset, midday, change of the time, the fluctuation of our energy with it, the biorhythms, okay? That is an important piece for us in Ayurveda. And then benchmarks in our life, like for our women, some of the women here, when do we start having our period? When is our first pregnancy? What is our life after post-delivery? What is the woman's body during lactation? What happens to a man during various stages of sexuality, libido, and then later stages of life? Benchmarks in our lives. What is it? Does a 15-year-old girl and an 8-year-old woman keep eating the same calcium just because it says for women and now it's golden colored or silver? It doesn't make sense. A growing girl may need more calcium at some point, but she may have such an adequate and healthy and virulent and vital digestion that she may not need the supplement. And a really old woman who is losing vitality in the bone, even if you give the calcium, it might end up that that person has such a frail and pooped out digestion that the calcium pill supplement injection causes more congestion, more constipation. So maybe instead of giving calcium, we need to promote the digestion, the metabolism, right? Yeah? But how can we have this concept that, okay, here, we isolated calcium and then give it from birth to death? It cannot be so. And so, who did we ask that? We asked nature. Plants and leaves and animals. You keep spraying too much food into the plants, they die. You keep giving them water just because a magazine article says 8 glasses of water or certain ounces of water, the plant dies. In summer, it wants water, but when it's raining, it has so much moisture around itself, it doesn't want water. But what do we human beings do? We make up like numbers in our mind and drink away we do. And we are all stockholders in water bottle industry. And, you know, we have private funds there, so we're buying away the water bottles, and, you know, we're taking fresh water that is sitting there, you know, on shelves for, like, say, 1 year before we drink that fresh water, you know, somebody's version of fresh. Wow. We don't think. But look at animals. They will get up and go to the water hole when they feel the thirst. And then they get up and then they do a downward dog yoga posture. Then they explore the nature. Then they think, am I really thirsty? Is it worth the trip? Then they amble along. They drink their fill. They don't say, oops, 8 ounce, better stop. Oh no, only 4 ounce, close your nose, drink it up. They don't do artificial things. They follow their intelligence. They are relatively fine. I mean, yes, we've created a whole industry of veterinarians and preventative healthcare and vitamins and minerals and boosters for our animals too, but I'll tell you, if nature was not looking after these animals, you really think without pet insurance we should have been deprived of all our animals by now? But animals are doing just fine. And I'll tell you, I have seen wild dogs in India. Actually, my family takes care of 20 or so because they eat in our house every day. They are fighting, like, you know, cult wars in the streets of India. And then they come to my home thinking, oh, fresh chapatis are being made for us, which we are. Because in India, we adapt every animal that comes our way, right? We don't spay them and whatever. We just let them be and we feed them. Now, they don't have arthritis. I just want you to know that. Have you seen dogs with arthritis in India? No. I'm not seeing these strange things. They're thin because they don't have a lot of food, but they have vigor and vitality. And they really know they're dogs. They don't watch TV. They fight fights in the street. They have territory. They live and they die royally like a dog. And they have dog bones, not like artificial synthetic bones inside them. So what I'm trying to tell you is, there is a way to live, and it's called nature's way. And Ayurveda is not my way, Shunya's way. It's not going to soon become her way, patented, Amba's way, Dinara's way. Now, in our tradition it says, this knowledge is immortal. It is being passed from one high consciousness to another that leapt beyond boxes and said, look, we are part and parcel of the same. The cosmos came to live inside me, and I am the cosmos. What worry do I have? Nothing is dying. Where does the dead leaf go? If only it has to come back again in spring. And if death is not a fear, then it is only a matter of quality of life. Cancer cannot take us. A car accident so bad cannot take us. According to Ayurveda, soul leaves at will, when it has to. In bed, sleeping, meditating, peeing, eating. What fear of death? Then it is just a matter of leading your life day by day in the Garden of Eden like a flower. It really is. So according to Ayurveda, for example, if it is summer, we should not always be using extra air conditioning because our body may be needing that heat. Do you see? You are a physical product. You've studied physics. You need heating, you need melting, you need condensing, you need moistening, sometimes you need drying. Isn't that what happens to your garden? Things dry up, because then when they dry up and then the rain comes, then they absorb the moisture. So nature is working on living things. But what do we do? The moment it is summer, oh, close this, close that, air conditioning, then something here. I don't know what all things we do. Just to kind of say, what is it? This, which finger we show? This to summer. Why? Why? You know? So a little bit of exposure to summer, the heat, a little bit of exposure to wetness, a little bit of exposure to coldness doesn't hurt the body, it heals the human body. But we live in extra artificial environment. So I and my colleague, my very senior professor, Yogeshji, We are the two people who are always saying, switch off the AC, switch off that, don't do this, because we always want to live more and more in natural environment. Do you understand what I mean? Now, this can feel like a cult, all these people sweating away in summer. Oh, those Ayurvedic people, they're the ones that sweat. They don't even wear deodorants because it's artificial. But guess what we do in summer? We wear necklaces made of fresh flowers. And we embalm our body with cool sandalwood. You can't beat us in summer. No. Mm-mm. I am right now wearing essential oils. You can come sniff me if you're nice. And they are made of fresh flowers, appropriate for the season. Because even when I'm smelling, I'm taking in certain ingredients of nature. Why would I care to put some chemical deodorant? See? And something, nature designed certain holes here to drop some liquid. Why would we stuff it? Because according to Ayurveda, the liquid in the body sometimes has to be kept in, sometimes has to be excreted out or evaporated out. There is a very fine intelligence operating in the body. And what do? We said, oh, well, this is smelly and sweaty and it kind of, you know, prevents you from attracting your soulmate, which, by the way, smells you and comes close to you, or not. So what you do is you put a bunch of chemicals and you block all those channels. Okay, you block all those channels. What happens to that 1 or 2 ounces of extra liquid that was meant to be evaporated through those channels called srota? They become a liability to your body. And they will then tax your kidneys, am I right? Over the long period, they will tax the water metabolism of the body. Then you can have water retention. You can have edema. So I had never heard of a deodorant until 10 years ago. And I'm telling you, when I came into this country and I went to the first supermarket, the deodorant shelf looked very enticing, especially the one called Secret. So when I had a little bit of money, I went to buy one. And I looked at it and I smelled it and I applied it. And I felt like I'll die. Because if you've not applied chemicals on your body, you can feel the difference. Just get a newborn infant and put a deodorant on the baby. The baby can die. Because we are breathing through every pore, do you see? We're breathing through every pore. Get a brand new leaf, try it on a brand new leaf, and apply deodorant, block its channels, it will die. So, don't tell the deodorant industry, because they'll ban me and my organization. I'm just giving you an example of how we can live in nature, and we go to college to understand the errors of not living in nature, or we come to a workshop, and then we go to a college, or we study with someone like me and my colleague here, to understand how to take beautiful chapters from nature. What to do that we can become more beautiful, more healthy, and get out of that wheelchair. That's the point. So, the knowledge is so vast that people have to go to school, like just for graduate level is 5.5 years. And then if you do like postgraduate level, it is 7.5 years. If you do PhD in it, it can be another 8 to 9 to 10 years of study. That's, you go to the university in India to study this science. So don't be fooled by me jesting around. I'm jesting around only to get your attention. See, I don't jest. I'm very serious about this knowledge. It has saved my life and the life of countless people. We have established our first low-cost clinic in Berkeley for where, very low donation money, which will help save other people in third world countries with this knowledge who can't afford it because it's a little elitist and expensive knowledge also hard to access. You can get some help. So it's not funny, it's very serious, and it's the need of the hour. And that is why I established a non-profit. That is why it's a people's movement, and my students are becoming not just healers, but they are being asked to become humanitarian healers. Because nature is helping us free of cost. It's trying constantly. It even causes tsunamis and earthquakes to balance us, do you know? It creates floods to normalize humanity. So in Ayurveda it is said that when humanity or we and earth become so imbalanced, there will be natural phenomena to balance. So it's not a punishment or morality or karmic condition I'm talking about. I'm talking about where a lot of wetness is needed or a lot of dryness is needed at a large scale to balance. So nature has her way, and nature will have her way. And therefore, the sooner we understand nature, and so the sooner we benefit. But fortunately for us, we don't have to invent the wheel. Fortunately for us, thousands of years ago, who we call sadhu or sages, or consciousness that was beyond its Indian skin and its mentality and its religion, and we're just people all over the globe is what I feel, interacting and talking and saying, do you see all the boxes human beings have created? Let's think outside the box. And outside the box was a big shaded tree. And in that tree, there was nature alive. And in that alive nature, the knowledge was there for us to receive. So these books, these scriptures of Ayurveda, there are thousands of pages of them. And they've been around. They're being taught in colleges. We have unbroken tradition of these books being taught from, say, 1 AD, Charakshashrut's time, 1 AD. And they have been translated in every language. That's, English, Russian, German, So these languages are available. There was thousands of years ago the understanding of Ayurvedic surgery, Ayurvedic toxicology, Ayurvedic pediatric, Ayurvedic gynecology, psychiatry, rejuvenation, virilization, internal medicine, and preventative medicine. We have more pages on preventative medicine. If you live a certain way, you can say, what is it? This to disease. Is it this finger? I've never done it, so I'm having fun with it. Bear with me. What is life without humor? When life is so cool, all you can do is have humor. I find life easy. And so it's fun to play, you see. That does not mean I don't have aches and pains in my body, or I don't get bloating or gas occasionally, or if I overeat, I don't think, why I overeat. But those days are far and few. Those moments are short-lived. Those symptoms are easily balanced back with right choices again. I guess I have a disease. Many, many years ago, when I first came into the country, everybody told me, you need medical insurance. I had a well-meaning cousin who told me you need medical insurance. So with my little bit of money, I thought, well, let me get some insurance. And then with my insurance, I was told, you should go get a doctor's appointment. So I went to a doctor and I told him, I said, I have this condition. He goes, what? You don't look like you have it. I said, yes, but I do. And he said, well, let me take your measurements because I'm supposed to be, becoming like this slowly over time. And so he took my measurements and he said, gosh, they look pretty good. You don't seem to be having the disease. I said, I was told I do. Well, come back in a year. So I was not planning to renew, but I thought, well, before the year ends, I'll just go back again. He took my measurements again because I'm supposed to, my lung space and my ribs, they're all supposed to get fused and I'm not supposed to breathe and die. So then he took my measurements again and he goes, you're improving, do you know that? Do you know that? Do you know that? And that's when I told him, I said, yeah, I know that. How is that happening? Because I just checked your genetic testing and your blood test and said, yeah, because I do yoga. Oh, you do that yoga stuff, do you? Uh-huh. And I also follow a system of medicine from India called Ayurveda. And what is that? Because have you heard of a person called Deepak Chopra? Oh, yes, I've heard about him. Yes, yes. He teaches meditation and he makes people eat that jam. I said, yeah. That jam is helping you? I said, yes. That jam, Chyawanprash, very famous. I used to eat in childhood. I don't know if it saved me or not, but there's a story around it. It was discovered by a sadhu called Chyawan. And he discovered it after his own loss of vigor because of excessive love of life and wasting his energy. But then he had a growth experience from it. And he said, gosh, I have this beautiful human body and look how wasted I am. And I had all these powers of meditation and intelligence. Now let me channel it in the right way. And that is when the universe taught him the recipe of Chyawanprash. And then he concocted using how many ingredients? 40-something, right? 48 or something, yeah. With clarified butter and Indian gooseberry and so many beautiful things in it. And then he took one bite of it and there was this miraculous transformation in him and he became youthful forever. And this is a true story. It really is. And so many people are eating herbs like this that have no side effects. Ayurveda, when done properly, does not have a healing catharsis time. You don't say, well, I had this side effect, but it's going to go away. Or maybe I manifested the side effect. No, no. When you have nature and you understand the template and somebody who's scholarly, knowledgeable and with practical skill showing you the way, you only get better. That's all I know. That's all I know. And I have seen it for more than a decade, in much more than a decade in my own private practice, and I've seen it in my life. And just there is nothing wrong, because Ayurveda says it is not a medicine if it gives you a side effect. Only that will be considered a medicine which counteracts the imbalance and does not create another imbalance. So all your so-called beautiful meds being advertised on TV and then all the horrible part of it spoken fast. May cause kidney failure, may cause heart stroke, may cause... That's not medicine. So in Ayurveda, people may take 10 days to match the medicine for you or may say to you half the time, you don't need a medicine, you need to take a walk. That's what Yogeshji does most of the time in the clinic. He says, okay, first you go for 10 days for a walk, then you come back and talk to me. Sir, please give me some medicine. You go take a walk, then you come back and, come on, please, I'll give you more money. You first take a walk and then I'll talk to you. And when the healer is steadfast in that wisdom and the person thinks, gosh, you know, everybody's getting better, might as well take a walk. And that walk, you know, improves the muscle gives vitality to the heart opens up the digestive system and the cheerfulness, the attitude improves. And then as you're walking, you meet the love of your life, so the happiness increases. And then you want to lose more weight and then you're on the right diet. And 2 months later, you come back to this doctor and say, thank you for sending me on a walk. Everything is fixed. Thank you. You see, somebody has to say the truth. You can't just always be writing a medicine. And sometimes somebody may be taking a walk, and a walk, and a walk, and a walk, and to that person, the Ayurveda person will say, you're walking too much. You need to rest. You're exercising way too much in the wrong season that is drying you and burning you. It is not appropriate. Your joints have begun to crack. You need to oil them and nourish them and rest and meditate and do Tai Chi and rejuvenative yoga. And you don't need to be exercising. What are you fighting with? Which ghost are you fighting away with in your exercise? So there is not this one thing fits all. I mean, I've met people with like cracking joints and hurting, you know, body and spontaneous weight loss and they're exercising away. And for them, I would say, you know, you should drink milk and dairy and nourishing meat soups, and you should be resting, and you should be like taking care of yourself, and you should be sleeping in the daytime and sleeping early and sleeping more hours than being active. And for some people who are heavy and obese and tired, I would say, don't fall asleep in the daytime. Stay awake till late and get some work done. Move around for God's sake. And so there is opposites for people. It's not like, okay, 8 glasses of water, exercise every day, B complex, calcium, oh, get this, frozen yogurt with chemicals, you're good to go. Oh, and here is this anti-cholesterol medicine, which, by the way, is hepatotoxic, but we're not going to talk about it. You can come back in for blood test, and you can stress over trying to get your appointment, and we won't really know you when you come back because we don't know your name. We are depersonalized medical care. Well, that is not Ayurveda. When you walk into the presence of an Ayurvedic healer, they will recognize you because they have studied the human body, mind and soul. They welcome you. We are taught the ethics of being at service to the person who's coming to see us. If we forget your name and we forget your pain, we have fallen from our own grace. So say the sadhus, so say the sages. That be not arrogant of the knowledge you have. It is not yours. It is coming from an immortal source, and it should be passed on to beings worthy of it. And if you can help someone with this knowledge, then it is your good grace. You know, Ayurveda taught me my own ethics as a healer. For a while there, because I didn't know my ethics as a healer completely, and then I learned it again through Ayurveda's window. You know, when I was in India and my Baba, my grandfather, was an Ayurvedic practitioner, come a yoga teacher, come a saint, come a family person, come just a person who you could go to for all your problems. People would come to our house at all times of the day. And sometimes I was growing up and I didn't know why we couldn't say no. And we were just growing up girls, and I had to make chai for them at like 1 at night because they've come from a far off place. And then we have to spread out a bed for them in our house because they are in pain. And so I learned that. So when I came to America, the first thing I got was a business card with my timings, 9 to 5. And I thought, wow, I have boundaries. And if somebody called me at 5 after 5, God, they got an irritable, cranky healer. And do you know what I did for a year? I even got a collection company. Somebody told me, you know, people are not paying you and checks are going bad. This is what you need to operate in America with. People will take you seriously. What do I know, poor immigrant? Okay, go get a collection agency. Horrible people. Well, that was the worst year of my life because I had more unfortunate thing happen to me than I could have given anybody any misfortune. So I quickly stopped, you know. I just used it once, that collection company, and I just shut everything out of my life good. And when I woke up from that, I realized I'm a healer. I'm available to everyone 24/7, just like God is available to us anytime we pray. We are available all the time. And if somebody's check bounces, I'm so glad it bounced on me because I can handle it. They cannot. And if somebody has cheated me on purpose, then maybe karmically I'm just being taught something. I will never cheat anyone. So these are ethics in Ayurveda, where we are not just temporary, fix-it, band-aid people giving you things that are just being tried and tested in a laboratory that has no connections with life. Ayurveda literally means, in Sanskrit, Ayur means, it comes from the word Ayush, life, and Ved means knowledge. It is the knowledge of life. So it is the knowledge of what? Body? No. Mind? No. It is the knowledge of life inside us, which is our spirit. So it is the knowledge of that consciousness. And so what I'm bringing to you is a series of strange, disconnected statements. I don't know if I'm good enough today. I love teasing her. I'm just coming from my own experience. I don't know. But I'm speaking from a place of my own life inside me. And I'm just having like this random dialogue with you. There is a concept of energy beyond matter. We're made up of matter, and beneath that, matter is made up of subtle matter called energy, or forces. These forces get imbalanced, they give us health. When they become imbalanced due to food choices, lifestyle choices, behavioral choices, interpersonal choices, spiritual choices, then we become sick. And so sometimes I have held cancers at bay or not allowed them to come back. I've helped a person not, you know, have another episode because they made the right spiritual choices. And sometimes that same cancer was held in check through food choices. And sometimes that cancer was welcomed with open heart as the reason for the life moving on. So there is no one customized fit to everything. There is always scope for introducing balance where needed. And sometimes that balance includes dying. So we don't have this radical, strange, non-natural behavior like I had read somewhere that modern scientists have come to this conclusion that death is an artificial and strange phenomena, and it's a matter of time before we develop an anti-aging, anti-death pill. Why? Everything ages. Stars die. Stars become black holes, and black holes become stars. You know that? Everything is changing. Why? And if we want to say the why, that we want to have a say, then explain where we come from. The Big Bang, then where did the Big Bang come from? So from that little particle of matter and energy condensed, then why did it burst and who made it burst and what happened before the burst? And where was it held? So if we are going to stop the natural rhythms of nature, then we have to be able to then understand the whole equation and not just a part. So when a science declares quadrant demonstrandum, QED, take your calcium pill, take your B-complex, make your surgery, cut your uterus, change your joint, without any backwards and forwards, and we follow like fools, like sheep, we're doing this because we've been told to do that, in spite of random, crazy, miserable side effects, and evidence to prove that this is not working, though it works occasionally. And when it is needed, we should take it. But it should not be the only way. And I'm not sitting here against allopathy, because my life is too precious to be against anything. But I want to show you that I would use allopathy if I needed to. But there are chances that even if I keep coming to this bookstore and reading all these books and drinking this Tulsi tea, I might never need all that radical chop, cut and burn business. You know, well-being choices. When I awakened, I realized physical health will never lead to well-being. You can have the perfect cholesterol and the perfect heartbeat and the perfect muscles. Only well-being will lead to health. Well-being. So, even listening to me, if it gives you well-being, then you have improved your health. And when you hang around with dark people, gossipy people, miserable people, eat junk food, and hang around in shops and things which just tempt you with like more and more of the seductive, crazy kind, then you've been selling your soul and reducing your well-being, and then you've actually come away sick. Have you noticed that? Have you been to like a mall and come back feeling like sick? Have you felt that? How do you feel here? Tell me.
I don't want to go to.
Yeah. I also stopped going to them, except that now I need things, but then my students go shopping for me, so it's better. So I had to found a college so that I don't have to go to the mall.
I was at a symposium with 400 women recently, and they have a marketplace where they use, where people sell their things on Sunday afternoon, and this gal came back to the teepee and said, I just don't feel right. Something's gone wrong. And I said, well, it's all the money energy that's all in the... I didn't participate in it.
The grabby, seductive money energy, the consumerism, the blindness. We can consume, but let's consume attentively. Right? Let us consume, but consume it attentively. So, or are we just blind? Are we just crazy? So that's where we get lost. So whatever knowledge can help us be a little bit found is helpful. And whatever systems shut us down more, they are not helpful. This is a very bottom line information. So sometimes people ask me, you know, they'll call me, a student will say, I'm eating this food and I don't remember the quality of what it is going to do to my body, because I mean, there's a science to that level. You eat this, this will happen, that will happen. Your bowel will be like this, your phlegm will increase overnight. So we've mapped it over the thousands of years. We had all the time to do our research. Yeah? But then I just can come down to say, how are you feeling about the food? Is your heart opening? Is your tongue salivating? But are you feeling like more grabby afterwards or satisfied? Satisfied. Good food for you. Have it. You're peaceful with it. Have it. So there are internal systems of check and balance. That's what I want to share with you. Maybe we'll open it for some questions or comments. Anybody like to say any?
I have a question. Have you worked with anybody with mental illness diagnosed with schizophrenia?
I'm the best person to work for with mental illness because I'm mentally ill. I really believe that. You become mentally ill when your paradigm changes, you know.
Well, I have a son that's diagnosed with schizophrenia.
We do.
I mean, the brain isn't working when he's, you know. I mean, and he's not on meds. He hasn't been on meds for a long time.
I have worked a lot. I mean, not just I, but in Ayurveda, we see the range of disorders. Schizophrenia, bipolar, neurasthenia, depression, melancholia. This is all, I mean, Ayurveda is a big part on psychiatry and psychology. Mm-hmm. So we not only give herbs, then in the relatively sane period, or suppose somebody has acute schizophrenia, so there's periods of sanity or some kind of alert period, or maybe there is none, we've lost the person completely. Then at that time, as a mother, for example, you would be chanting some mantra because you're in the field of the child. Mm-hmm. You know, so we would do what's called as a vibrational intervention. Herbs can be burnt or add around to smoke, inhale, or to be given as food. You see, the food would be altered. And slowly as the person's imbalance is restored, typically under mental illness, we have various hetu or causes. One of the causes could be karmic also. You understand karma? It could be a previous life thing also, or a this life, often sexual abuse, or some kind of a difficult knot in childhood is there. So if the person's personality becomes accessible, then we work with it in a logical way. But if that person's personality is inaccessible, right, you're only getting the schizophrenic personality, but now the internal, vital personality, then at that time we would do like things like only mantra or what certain rituals. And Ayurveda is not mumbo-jumbo witchcraft. It's actually a science of rituals that we would do and restore. Mm-hmm. So there is work. Yeah?
Definitely.
Anything else?
Complete case taking.
Complete case taking, of course. Exhaustive.
You need to know inside out. all the fine points.
And then with schizophrenia, we would also look at a physical body because the mind and the body are interacting. So digestion, elimination, we would, and then we keep giving the food because annamhi manav, food is mind. So what we do is we change the food 100%. So after a while, the brain chemicals, even if schizophrenia is a chemical disorder, the chemicals also get generated from where? Food.
Yeah.
So if you change the food for 1 month, 2 months, 3 months, 1 year, sooner or later chemicals will change. And we have a concept of a diet called sattvic diet. That diet alone is in Ayurveda. It can only heal the mind. Somebody like me, I will only eat that food 99-90% of my life. I would eat it 100%, but it's not always in my purview to be able to eat it. But yes, 90-95% we eat that food. And that has been another reason I'm having fun in life. And I was, many, many years ago, when I was going through a miserable marriage and unhappiness, when I knew the knowledge of Ayurveda, but I didn't internalize it, was diagnosed bipolar. And was given Prozac and I ate it and it helped me for a month. But after that I decided it's me or the Prozac. I'm very proud of my mental sickness. Because I transformed it. Yeah. So yes, there is hope. But one has to go from physical help all the way to non-physical. Mm-hmm. And if the person is sick, then the family members, they would perform. We also have astrological, what is called as intervention. Astrological intervention. This one, it gives me courage to be a spiritual entrepreneur. It doesn't make me a spiritual renunciate, go sit in the Himalayas. Oh no, it tells me drive to Sebastopol and talk. And this one teaches me what, you know, it says you can live without wanting anything. You can renounce and be perfect in the world. So it's astrological. These things are not minor, they are medicine. I carry them with me. And this is ritualistic. This is medicine, what I'm wearing, these seeds, Rudraksha. Pure Rudraksha. When this stays and touches me, my heart, my physical heart remains vital, my emotional heart remains vital, strong. Like that.
Are there any kinds of foods that you don't recommend for all types of people?
Oh yeah. We don't recommend what's called as tamasic foods. They are opposite of sattvic or pure foods. These are in today's world old foods.
Old.
So old, okay. Stale, canned, things sitting around in a dark can, you know, what vitality, chi or prana it has. And we don't recommend, if you have any kind of digestive challenge, we don't recommend salads or even juicing too much. Because see, things that were meant to be natural juices are in the form in nature as juice. Yogeshi and I were just talking about it. Why do we juice everything? Because then that increases the water amount in the body to deal with. So if an apple is an apple, drink it as an apple, eat it as an apple. You understand? So, a very fresh orange is naturally juicy. So when you eat it and you use your teeth, most of it becomes a juice. But we don't have to artificially juice it and then juice away, because then that will convert our whole insides into juice. We don't want that. So foods that we don't recommend anybody is old food. So like people in my family, my husband says, God, it's now he's got it right because he's the cook in our family. But if he would cook more food, I won't eat it the next day, you know, and then we didn't even have stray dogs to feed. So we didn't know what to do with the food, you know. But I would say, well, let's just put it down the drain, honey, because down there live ants and parasites, and they'll finish it off. But I don't want to feed myself and then develop parasites to finish them here. So we always make, so nothing goes a waste, you know, it becomes matter that's decaying and then ultimately fungus, bacteria, somebody get it. But I'd rather put it down the drain than through this drain. So I would rather drink a hot cup of milk. And when I used to eat eggs, I would rather eat a fresh egg. You know, I would just rather have a fresh fruit rather than have something that's been cooked and it's sitting, because the, as it sits, it accumulates a very heavy, decaying vibration. And for mental sickness, it's really important that very fresh food be given.
So even one day old leftovers, you don't go for that?
No. I mean, when I say I don't go for it, I don't go for it. But between restaurant food and your own one-day leftover, I prefer a one-day leftover from your own kitchen, because it's organic, because you cooked it with love, you know. That's better, right?
What about frozen food?
Yeah, frozen food aggravates the energy of cold in your body. So maybe in summer you can get away with it, or, you know, maybe. What I'm saying is maybe. But when I'm saying frozen, see, if you think about it in nature, if you were an Eskimo, you'd pretty much be eating frozen food, right? But then at that time, you had to be an Eskimo. I mean, what nature you were born in makes a big difference. But if you were born somewhere in Europe and America, this is your climate, and your food doesn't come frozen. So frozen food is an anomaly for the human body. And you try non-frozen for 1 month, and you'll see the difference. So we try not to freeze the food at all, because the cold food, the moment it goes in, our digestion is hot. So when you take very frozen food, it first of all sucks away the heat from us, because it's physics. You see, so when you eat warm food, a warm soup or ginger or something that's good temperature, it adds to our heat. It doesn't take away from our natural heat, our digestive fire. But when you put a wallop of ice cream or cold food, what will it do? It will take. So it's physics. Does it give you heat? Does it take heat? Now, if you have a lot of heat, you're burning, you're acidic, do you think ice cream would work for you? Yeah, it could. But not a lot of, but, you know, a lot of the times we have heavy digestions and dull, frozen won't work.
Well, I have a garden, and so I have an abundance of squash, so I'm doing some things and freezing the squash. And what about drying things, you know, drying?
At least in the heat, drying and pickling may be better than freezing. Give it away to your neighbors. That would be better. Mm-hmm. In today's trying times.
So the frozen, if you take some the squash and you freeze it, does it take the prana out? The prana is no
Yeah, it completely changes the... In fact, there is an energy called vata. It's a cold energy which disturbs the nervous system and deep internal organs. That gets aggravated in the food. So you take a glass of milk, normal temperature, or fresh from the cow. Ah, it's amrit, nectar. It's actually warm as it comes out. Okay, we milked cows when we were young. And then what happens is, the more you keep it, it becomes heavier. Mm. But then you boil it again or heat it again, it becomes ready to be consumed. But then if you put it in the refrigerator, it becomes heavy for the digestion. But then if you freeze it, and then you drink it like that milk smoothie thing with ice and everything, it will disturb, then it becomes a disturbing agent in the body. And you drink it in the night when it's already cold, and you do it a couple of days, you have phlegm, you have heaviness, you have ear infection. I mean, I've had people who come to see me and they're sipping on like cold frozen milk or smoothies, and then they're having this constant ear infection, then they're taking antibiotic after antibiotic, and you know, they pay me money just to tell them, heat your milk. And they're so glad, they think I'm a magical person or something. Mm-hmm. But it's so normal, so don't use your refrigerator section. We have some ice cream in our refrigerator section, like one pint, and it's there. And we try to get the best ice cream, and it's kind of there, and, you know, depending on a very, very appropriate day, we would have it.
So you're saying that frozen foods, even though you cook them later and they're served warm, have still lost their vitality?
First of all, if I may, when the food was plucked, it was already become dead from being alive. Then it was frozen, put in the mortuary. Then you're eating it. That resolves all the questions.
Part of
one of my passions for the study, the psychic Edgar Cayce, and he also speaks that food should be eaten within 24 hours after it's plucked, or it's pretty much valueless. But the sooner that you eat it after you pick it, the better it is.
Certain grains, as they age, they become more ripened, mm-hmm. or even old rice is good. Mm-hmm. But once you've cooked it, it needs to be eaten right away. So we cannot, again, with Ayurveda, we never customize everything. Mm-hmm. Honey, as it ages, become medicinal. Mm-hmm. Ghee, clarified butter, as it ages, takes on magical qualities. 50-year-old clarified butter, 100-year-old clarified butter, if you so much as touch your skin, migraines, headaches, eye problems go away, you know. Mouth ulcers, acid disappears. Old honey, the older the better. Mm. So there is, but Edgar Cayce was right, at least in saying that there is value to freshness.
I may have misquoted it as well, because I studied yeah. it for 30 years, but, and you know, sometimes, of course, knowledge deteriorates if we don't review it
yeah.
in general.
I just heard his one tape, and he's quite brilliant.
Yeah, well, he's been gone
for a long time now.
January 3rd, 1945, he passed. So. But he also mentioned about the great mineral content of berries, and you were mentioning that
Chevan Prashad had berries in them.
Yeah,
nowadays berries are doing very well. So there is this advantage. See, I want to tell you one more example. I saw that when animals get hungry, they go out to hunt or they go out to graze. They don't bring food and store it. And we human beings also would kill a fresh chicken or get a fresh egg or go do our, you know, fruit plucking, right? Ideally. So refrigerators is now a new situation. And I don't want to teach you some kind of a caveman mentality here. Let's go back to the Neolithic age. I'm not here to teach you that. We do have a refrigerator, and gosh, I use it in my house. Okay? I don't have a cow in my house here. But I do have a refrigerator, and I do put organic milk in it. But when I have to drink my milk, I don't use a microwave, and I boil my milk. And I boil it. And then sometimes I add healing spices to it, like turmeric or black pepper, which further break up the cold, heavy qualities of the milk and make it really digestive. Do you guys drink that spiced milk? How do you like it, Dinara?
Very much.
Yeah. So you try that milk, you know, boil your milk with a pinch of turmeric, cardamom powder, say some saffron. You know, your skin problems will go away. It's just that shining.
I never realized that black pepper had medicinal qualities.
It's huge, especially in winters, especially when it's rainy and wet. And if you start using black pepper in your food, like a medicinal reason, it would actually prevent you from having phlegm and allergies and indigestion. So black pepper is very medicinal, thank God, because it's used ubiquitously in the West. So it's very good.
And what about the saffron?
Oh, it's very good for the blood. It purifies the blood. It's an aphrodisiac. And it's very beautiful for your skin and complexion, no matter at what age. And you can even leave some in cold milk, rub the milk in it, and then apply it on your skin, and then wash it off and see the difference. It's really nice. Or take some whole cream, put some saffron in it, and leave it for a little bit, you know, and then apply it, and it's like a shot of collagen, natural collagen. But taken internally, it's excellent. It purifies.
Do you consider, like all the spices, they grow in India, and so they work for people who also have grown up in India. The people in Northern Europe, those are not native.
Those are not native.
Whose ancestors who have come from there are from America. Those things don't grow here naturally. Would they necessarily work the same for us as they would for somebody?
Not necessarily. So what happened was that Ayurveda has talked about this. Ayurveda says that we have to look at the local flora and fauna. Even in India, the same spice doesn't go throughout India. We have Himalayas in India, the Mount Everest. We have a desert,
And then we have spices that grow in the coastal areas. So we do recommend using more of the spices within that area. But say somebody is from Europe, where, for example, a certain quality of pepper grows, okay? But we would know what is a basic understanding of what peppers do. And we would say if you're heavy, obese, phlegmy, pepper is better for you. And if you're hot, acidic, and angry, peppers are less important for you. But for example, saffron does grow in Spain and surrounding European area. So we would then use that as a idea. So for my Italian students or patients, I would tell them, well, you have marjoram and thyme and this and that, so then use that. Then garlic is a universal spice. Ginger is a universal spice. Fresh ginger or dry ginger. This dry ginger powder, you know, it is considered as vishvabheshaja, right? It is a universal healer of every problem. So this dried ginger should be used a lot in our food. And it a lot doesn't mean like that. A little pinch, even in your milk, in your yogurt, you can add it and it will be helpful. So then turmeric, you know, turmeric is something that is very unique to India. But then it was found that turmeric, whether given as a capsule, as an injection, whether in HIV, whether to mice, whether to humans, it was found that it is such an amazing medicine that America wanted to patent it, and then India had to fight it in world court and say, get lost. This belongs to us, right? Because, you know, everybody wants to patent the good thing, right? But guess what? Turmeric is something that we started saying to every human being, every living thing to have. So my dogs, we cook them chicken, and they're American dogs. I mean, they were born here. It makes a difference because, you know, their parents were here, so they've been eating. They're from this season, right? They're living things. But we add to their chicken turmeric. And you have to come to my home because to see their skin. And they don't need vitamins or anything. They're fine, you know. So we started adding turmeric to every living thing, you know. And in fact, you know, we can when we pray to a certain plant called tulsi, which of tea I'm drinking, in the morning, you know, we pray to it. So we offer it a little bit of turmeric, you know, kumkum haldi. So we offer it a little turmeric. And for thousands of years, it has been prayed to in the morning because she needs water. So what happened was tulsi, this tulsi plant, this herb, tulsi is called in English holy basil. She needs lots of water. She's a goddess of abundance. So if you have a plant, you can worship her. So every morning you worship her, right? So in my house I had seen it, and here I didn't have tulsi. But my colleague, he has such green fingers, we said, would you plant the tulsi for me? And then my job is to worship her, because that's how she will bless us. So every morning when I go there, you know, early in the morning, and I give her some water, but I've already given her some turmeric, and some kumkum and little rice, and it all becomes part of her food, I think, after a while. And that's how we used to sprinkle it in India, I remember. So even tulsi used to drink up the turmeric and do really well.
So turmeric tea is a common drink?
It's a very common drink. A turmeric pickle, fresh turmeric, turmeric in food. Turmeric taken raw in the morning causes weight loss and reduces cholesterol, just a little pinch. So now when I talk about turmeric, I'm not creating it, nor did my grandfather or his dad. This is for thousands of years. We'll find hundreds of pages and references, and all falling in place. It's not like 10 books are saying something about turmeric and 3 others are saying something else. They're all matched up. And then what the Indian university system did is it took it upon itself to say, let's validate, you know. And so there has been countless research done on turmeric, and indeed it was found that it is the best antioxidant. It is an anti-cancer, antiviral, antiseptic, hepatoprotective, hemopurifier agent. So it is excellent medicine. Now, India is now becoming kind of a financially rich country.
Yes.
It is really growing in leaps and bounds. All my relatives are richer than we are here. But I found that when I was growing up, there was a lot of poverty, and I saw that. But I didn't see so much sickness. stomach ache, skin problem, burning headaches. I mean, people carry on with their lives. They get like natural aging diseases, not, you know, just diseases. And I realize that the poorest of the poor have in their curry turmeric. They have cumin, which is an excellent, you know, prevents all sorts of parasites, digestive issues get controlled. They have coriander powder, which keeps the system cool, purifies the blood. They may not afford saffron. But, you know, every person would have things like wheat, which is nourishing to the system. And I didn't find people having allergies to rice or wheat or honey or milk. This was a new concept to me, allergies, and I realized it's because of the chemicals in the food here, and then the disturbed way the cows are treated. You know, it's really shocking, you know, the bulk of the milk. Before the organic industry, what did you all do? Grow up on either canned milk or chemical milk. So it has really like messed up your digestive system. But I didn't know there was something called organic milk, because I only knew a cow and her milk. I didn't know there was an option.
Well, it's just been a short time of history that all of that has happened. My grandmother
didn't have this problem. And your grandmother didn't complain of like menopause. These are, you know, or osteoporosis. You know, because nobody was messing up with grandmother's hormones. If your periods are stopping, okay, bye-bye. We don't have to induce the period, go against nature to say, well, you just need estrogen because you're losing your boobs and your beauty. Well, it's time. It's nature's way. You know, there's a time to be a certain thing and then there's a time to not be that. So why even the issue of estrogen or no estrogen? Why? The more important thing for an aging man or a woman is, are they peaceful with their life? Are they feeling wholesome and fulfilled? Are they mentoring someone? Are they doing something before they leave the earth? Are they doing their work of forgiveness? Are they resolving everything? Are they walking and having a good digestion? Are they reading good books that are showing them that they are indeed in the best time of their life? Instead, we are being taught about things that are so random, you see. Like menopause is not a disease. Menopause is swabhavik vyadhi, natural condition. It is not a disease. I have a 72-year-old patient and she says, I have been diagnosed with osteoporosis. I looked at her and I said, so when did you expect to have a diagnosis of osteoporosis? If at 72 you have osteoporosis, how many years do you plan to live? She was shocked. I said, and if you're planning to live 10 more years or 15 more years, this lab test will take you to that far. And what do you want? Because the question was, his daughter-in-law said, go and see Shunya, go and see Shunya. Because the question was that, what if I have a fracture? And when you have a fracture, we will see to it. Why worry about it right now? So you might almost think that what? Ayurveda is questioning everything. Ayurveda doesn't talk like I do. Excuse me. Ayurveda talks very nicely. Ayurveda is very polite. I just take the liberty. I feel like I'm in my home with all of you. Any other questions? Otherwise we close with a prayer.
Just one last comment that in the study of Edgar Cayce, he mentioned that we have, along our glandular centers, along our spine, he considered them sub-brains, and then I've been studying the brains in the cranium, in the cranial vault, and we have four brains in our heads, and so when you said how smart we are, you know, if left to our own devices, we are, and if we're relaxed and so on. We are incredibly intelligent.
It is so true, because of what Edgar Cayce, I don't know his world that much, but whatever he talked about was brain was the chakras. Any chakra is an intelligent system. And you may well know this, that we are full of chakras and every cell is a chakra. So I mean, we're this buzzing, amazing intelligence. Watch out.
Yeah.
except when we decide to forget all about it and give away our power and have to read the last issue of whichever magazine to really know how we should eat, think, or live. Well, I choose to reclaim my power. And if there's anything I will bow to, then it will be a system of medicine that is talking directly to the gods and to nature. And to me, in my world, in my dream, I found that to be Ayurveda. So thank you so much for inviting me. I felt you throughout. You were radiating me love. Thank you so much. If you need Ayurvedic medicine help, this is our low-cost clinic. It's $30 an appointment. Come and donate us whatever amount you want. This is a flyer on our college. And this is on a two-month certificate course. Again, whatever money you bring here goes towards our charitable mission. I'm a woman on a mission. I'm joined by a team of students and friends and colleagues and this larger family. So everything that comes towards anything you do in Ayurveda with us will go towards healing somebody. For example, in India, we're opening a low-cost clinic where people don't have enough food, they don't have blankets, and they don't have medicine. So what's the point of only giving them medicine? We'll also have to give them a blanket and food. And that's the loving way of the healer today. So I'll end with a Vedic prayer. My students can join me, Asatoma. We'll say three times Om.
Satoma sakamaya tamasoma jyotirgamaya mrityorma amritangamaya om shanti 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 om peace.
May our life journey be one in which we find that we are moving from untruths to truth, from darkness to light, and from disease, decay, and the falsehood of mortality to health, vitality, and the immortality of the spirit and the self, which is the only truth. Jai Ma. Thank you. Thank you.
Thank you so much. That was really wonderful.
Thank you.
And thank you all for coming out tonight. Many of you know our custom to have a donation bowl, and we are happy to share the contents of that donation bowl at the end of the evening with our speaker to support her work, obviously very worthy, and also to help make this space available for continuing events like this. So thank you all for coming tonight. And I'm sure our speaker will be happy to chat a little bit.
Sure.
If you have some personal questions. So thank you so much.
Thank you. Thank you.